Bonham. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Hild?
I was born on the 19th of August 1923 in London.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background?
My father was a chemist, and he was working in the government chemist department as a civil servant. He had served in the First World War. He met my mother while he was at Nottingham University College, and I think she was there as well. And as a matter of interest, they had got married in 1916 by popping into the register office and getting married, but not telling anyone. They were married again in church in 1917, and they had two marriage certificates. But he obviously he served throughout the war, first of all in the Lancashire, the York and Lancashire Regiment, but then in the Royal Engineers. But he never spoke about his war experiences, and he never went back to France or left the country again.
Now, how many were there in the family?
It was just my sister and myself, and I was the older of the two.
Was that a comfortable back home? Whereabouts in London were you?
When I was 9 months old, we moved out to Byfleet in Surrey, with a large garden, 2 acres of garden, and a house which was a wooden house. And I think my parents must have bought it for some fairly small sum. But as a result of that, all members of our family always had very large gardens. But it was a lovely background in the country. From the age of six, I cycled to school every day by myself.
Now what school was that? What was your education?
Well, I first of all went to a small private school. And then when I was nine, I went to Woking County School. 3 years.
And what kind of an education did you get there? Can you give us a sketch of it?
In those days it was an early grammar school education. But then when I was 11, my father looked to see which the best school was to go to, and he found that Merchant Taylor's School at Sandy Lodge had more close scholarships to Oxford than any other school. And so in due course I took the scholarship exam to Merchant Taylor School. The first, I took it twice actually. The first time I was very young and didn't get a scholarship. The second time I didn't get a scholarship, but I must have been next in line because I went into Upper 4A, which was the top of four forms.
And what year was it you started there then?
I started there in 1935.
And what was it like there? Was that a day school or
It was a day school. We lived in Norfolk, about 2 miles away, 3 miles away. I cycled to school every day.
Had the family moved to Norfolk?
Well, the family moved to Norfolk too. I remember the fees then were £12 a term, and they went up while I was there to £16 a term. But by then I had got a scholarship.
And what kind of a school was it? What was it like?
Well, it had moved out to Sandy Lodge in 1934, brand new school buildings, I suppose 50 acres, 100 acres of playing field around about. Very much, I suppose, a middle class school in the sense that with the old traditions and everyone was expected to be in the corps.
That's the officer's training corps.
The officer's training corps. One or two people were exempt and went into scouts, but it was expected to be in the officer's training corps, and at the age of 15 you became a recruit and were in the officer's training corps. And I think one had a background that you were expected to serve. Your fellow man. And most people would go off probably in those days to colonial service, the foreign service, civil service, that sort of background.
Was it an academic environment?
very academic. But well, I think I was fairly academic, but every Wednesday afternoon, every Saturday afternoon, there were sports. We played cricket in summer, rugby in winter, athletics. So it wasn't academic in that sense.
Was the prestige in the school, you know, I mean, peer group prestige, was the sportsman or was the academics or a mixture of both?
A mixture of both. I mean, a lot of the academics were good sportsmen. It wasn't held against you if you weren't a good sportsman, it wasn't held against you if you weren't an academic.
So quite a healthy environment.
Yes, perfectly happy. Yes.
Now, what about these OTC? What was the OTC training? Could you run through what you did?
Well, you became a recruit, as far as I can remember, when you were 15. And in those days, one had putties. And I still today, I can only tell whether pictures of the First War or the Second War to see whether people were wearing putties or not. It was drill to begin with, then field training. We had a field day every term. We would go off to Richmond Park or somewhere around.
Taking it one at a time, what about the drill? How did you take to drill?
Oh, I always took to drill. I found, especially later in the army, that drilling in large numbers was almost a pleasure. I mean, I was at Santos later on, and to drill with 500 men drilling perfectly, you're proud of what you can do under those circumstances.
Did you understand at the time the reasons for it, or did you just enjoy it for its own sake?
No, I think I just enjoyed it for its own sake. Some were not so good as others. I mean, when you're 15, perhaps you turn left to say right and things like that. But some were worse than others. But I've always found that drill is a very satisfactory from the point of view of the people being drilled.
Did you have any weapons training at all?
Oh, yes. There was a small, what is it, a 25-yard range. In the
0.22 range.
0.22 range. Though I never fired there very much. There was a lot of field training.
How far did they go? I mean, it didn't sound like weapons training was too as important as the field training.
Oh, I think so, yes.
Did you do?
We went off to Ireland, yes. You could go to Bisley Camp. I think as you got older, you'd go to Bisley Camp, but it rather came to an end with the war. I was only 16 at the beginning of the war, so I did go to Bisley on one occasion. So I think there was probably far more training before the war than there was during the war when camps became more difficult.
So what would you do in one of these camps, the field training?
Well, as I say, I never went off to a camp on the usually on the day the days out say in Richmond Park you would be set a task. You'd have to advance from A to B, making use of ground cover. It may be that some other part of the company would be taking up defensive positions and making the best use of the ground you could. But I know Bertram sort of commonly went on another occasion. They took various forms, and certainly as I was 15 in 1938, and it wasn't until you were 60 that you really advanced in the Corps. By then the war had come, and one's movement was far more limited.
Now, were you aware of, I mean, you were young, just a young chap, were you aware of what was going on in Nazi Germany, things like Hitler, that sort of, the foreign affairs situation? Did you follow?
Very aware of it from 1937, Spain. I remember that at the time of Munich, shame the time from Munich, feeling that war was coming, and certainly in 1939 one was very conscious that war was going to come very soon.
Was it a, did you realise it would affect you? I mean, you were only 16. I mean, you know, so was it a personal thing to you, or did you think it'd be...
Well, I knew it was coming, and I remember on the first day of the war, I was fortnight after my 16th birthday, I walked down the road with my father.
Did you actually hear the broadcast?
I heard the broadcast. Within 5 minutes of the end of the broadcast, the sirens went, and actually we went down into the cellar. The house next door had a cellar, and went into the cellar of that house. And I mean, from then on, one was very conscious of what was happening. My father, I remember my father saying it would be a long war, or he thought it would be, and he just got to buckle down and do your best.
Now, how did the outbreak of war affect your life at the Merchant Taylor School in the first instance?
In the first instance, it didn't really, as far as I can recollect, it didn't really affect it very much at all. When it was Dunkirk that changed the whole situation.
Before that, were there any air raid precautions instituted?
No, I think, yes, there were ducks under the school, and we were meant to go into these ducts when the where all the pipes were, when air raid sounds sounded, and we had one or two practices, but it didn't affect one, as far as I remember, it didn't affect one very greatly in the first year of the war.
And then you said Dunkirk made a difference.
Yes, Dunkirk. But I remember one or two masters went off to the war. Especially my first two masters I had when 1935, 1936, and 1937, they went off to the war. And very shortly afterwards, they were both killed. But that must be after Dunkirk. Certainly by the time of Dunkirk, one realised that things were getting very serious.
Now, what about your activities at the OTC? How did they change as you got older? And
they changed in this sense, that in, I suppose, I became a Lance Corporal or something, the end of May, the LDB was formed, which lived in the Home Guard. My father joined up on the first day. Within a fortnight, there was a case of American rifles covered in thick grease, and he brought his rifle home to clean it. But it was solid grease, and I mean, I began to realize things were serious. And about soon after Dunkirk, I think our rifles were removed from the armour because they were short of rifles, and they were Lee-Enfield rifles. So I think it appeared when the school didn't have any rifles. But certainly by July, those in the OTC over the age of 17 were enrolled, if they're factoring the Home Guard.
Now, which Home Guard unit were you attached to?
The school OTC was a Home Guard unit in its own right, but there were various sort of officers and various other people there. There was a regular Sergeant Major, Horace Mannion, who I think remained with the... I don't think he was recalled as a reservist. I think he remained with the unit. And we formed our own Home Guard unit, which was defending. There was a the northern tank defences, anti-tank defences of the London, because the River Colne ran through the fields. And thereafter, most of our practical training was home guard training rather than OTC training.
So what was the training? There's two elements there. Firstly, what was the training? And secondly, what were your duties in this defending these tanks?
I suppose the training. I think we must have had some firing, actual firing practice with 303 rifles, and there was a certain amount of digging of prepared positions, and we were a lot of positions to go to if anything happened, and then, of course, things rather after September, October 1940, the threat of invasion was very much cut down, and I suppose perhaps I don't recall very much of what happened thereafter, but the Corps went on. The Corps had a parade every Friday afternoon. General training went on, and then I gradually just promoted to the corporal in sergeant, and I think the end I was out of range, and I left the sergeant.
But it became less and less important.
It became less and less important when the threat of invasion was reduced, and then one rather went over onto fire watching, because perhaps I want to say this. In September 1940, my father was in the government chemistry department, but he was the expert in the army supplies, and he was based in Deptford, and of course the supply depot at Deptford was burnt out in September 1940. And he was transferred up to Thornley Bank in Glasgow. And my parents then moved up to Glasgow for a year, and my sister. And as far as the school was concerned, it made provision for what were known as emergency boarders. So there was one boarding house at school, but there were another 50 boys put up as emergency boarders in the school itself, and for the rest of my school career, which was to the end of December 1941, I was boarding at the school.
Were you homesick? Well, it was your home, but I mean, did you miss your parents?
I don't think so particularly. Rather accepted it. I went to see them at during the school holidays, and in actual fact, they didn't return to Norfolk until the end of the war, because my father later was from Glasgow, went to the Ministry of Food in Coleraine Bay, and lived at Conway then, and later he went back to London. But in some ways, it was rather nice, because in Glasgow we went walking in the mountains, in Conway we walked in the mountains. We were all very active then.
Now, what about your education? What were you working towards?
I was working towards a classical scholarship for Oxford. There were three contenders for two scholarships, and I was certainly didn't get the first one, but I did get the second one. I was with a group of friends who were all working to go to Oxford or Cambridge, which was, I suppose, unusual in those days, but one never really thought of any other university other than Oxford and Cambridge. and Merchant Taylor had a very successful exhibition from the College of Oxford.
So what happened next then? When did you go to...
One took one's higher certificate, and you would go up to Oxford or Cambridge 2 years later, which is you take the scholarship exam four terms after the December, and then you effectively got two terms off. But what happened was I took the scholarship examination for Oxford in December 1941. I got a scholarship and went up in January 1942 on the basis I was going up for 1 year. It got to the stage then when you were allowed to defer your call up for 1 year if you went to the university, but you would only, unless you were some scientists may have said the university is longer than that, or doctors, but otherwise you would expect to go to service after that.
And where were you living in Oxford? Or which college did you go? Did you go to St. John's?
I was at St. John's College, and that year, half the college was taken over, I think, by the Ministry of Food or somebody, so there were very few people there. And I lived in college, in rooms in college.
Now, what, you were a cadet there still? OTC.
That was just, I think it was called Senior Training Corps then. And I joined the Royal Armoured Corps section of the SDC. Now, the reason for that is that I want to go back to at school. Everybody, of course, was talking to you about going to the RAF, but my eyesight, I knew, would not qualify me for the RAF. And at school, I think it was something 1941, I don't think it was 1940, they produced one afternoon three tanks. I think they were probably Covenant as the predecessor of the Crusaders. And I decided there and there, I would go to tanks. I don't know where you would answer
that. It just attracted you then? You just
I don't know. I just thought they were the in thing those days. That they were. Well, that's what was, they were going to win the war. I didn't realise that they were rather inferior to the German tanks at the time.
And what sort of training did you do with the Royal Armoured Corps section of the Senior Training Corps?
Well, as far as I remember, it was about a day or a day and a half a week. One talks about people doing 48-hour weeks and things like that, but during the war, the hours one worked were phenomenal, because on top of this, you had to do all your five terms work in three terms, and do your and you still played your cricket and your rugger and drank your beer. I don't know how one did it, but it was remarkable how much you can do. It was a bit of driving, a bit of riding motorcycles, a bit of gunnery, a bit of wireless. We didn't have any tanks there, but we were taught to drive. I was taught queerly to ride a motorcycle, but I've never been a good motorcyclist. I survived. That was the main thing on the motorcycle. And then we used to go out to Blueberry down the long way and practice tactics and huddle down positions and things like that.
And which tanks were you using?
We as far as I can remember, we had no tanks. There may be we had we did a lot of tubes, and we had, I suppose, there may be rain gun carriers, but we didn't actually have any tanks as such.
And did you find that you were able to keep up with your academic studies?
Yes. I wasn't actually Well, I suppose I was an academic, but I wasn't a great classical scholar. The master said to me 20 years later, "Well, you know, John, you never were a classical scholar." I think I was probably. I was more interested probably in history and other things like that. But,
And what was the next stage then? You were there for about a year then?
I was there for a year till the end of December 1942. I took my finals and then I was available for service. And I remember my parents were then living in Conway and I went off to Conway home and I was very surprised that it was at least 6 weeks before I was called up. I was expecting something more instantaneous than that. Because at that time, I remember clearly on the raid on Pearl Harbor, because we used to have the 9 o'clock news on at night. We were at the Majesty border at the time, and I remember the news came through on the 9 o'clock news that the Japanese had attacked Pearl Harbor. I think there was a sigh of relief in most of us.
Why? Why were you so pleased?
Because I think we realised it brought America into the war on our side, and one knew perfectly well that there wasn't much hope of doing anything unless that happened. Because Russia was doing very badly at that time.
Now, what was the call-up procedure then?
Honestly, I do not know. I suppose everybody had registered, had an identity card. Somehow I must have been deferred. I suppose the university must have said, well, I was now available or something. I had to wait. And then I just received a notice to report to a pre-op to a Blackburn.
Now, what was you were intending to be an officer then? Or was that their decision?
Well, that was their decision, I suppose. I suppose one said, oh, somebody who'd been to university office of material. I mean, I didn't apply to be an officer or anything like that. But I don't know, I suppose. I mean, the whole of my education, one expected to be a leader of men. I don't know if you get that ethos of education these days, but I mean, that's what the school was set out to do, I think. Not to make money, but to do something good for the country.